My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She is president of the Galen Institute and is one of the most knowledgeable and well-respected healthcare experts in the nation. She joins me now to discuss the American Healthcare Act that passed the House of Representatives on Thursday and what's to come in the Senate, as well as other details related to this debate. And Grace Marie, thanks very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Greg.
The key to getting this passed after the original bill was pulled a few weeks ago was the so-called MacArthur-Meadows Amendment, which a cursory description, I guess, would mean giving more power to the states on a variety of issues. So explain what the amendment did and how significant of a change it is.
Well, there was a lot of concern that one of the reasons that health insurance has become so expensive under Obamacare is because of all the regulatory requirements. The structure in the Senate of getting this through the Senate makes it very difficult to address regulations on their face. And so what they said was, we will provide some additional funding to the states, very generous funding, $130 billion to the states. And if they decide that they want to take this as a grant instead of the entitlement structure of existing Obamacare, then they can have flexibility in revising the regulations in their own states that would make health insurance more flexible, that would give people a greater incentive to purchase it, and that would give people more choices than they have now. So it really does devolve power to the states, and the Meadows Amendment even took that further. And that was one of the things, plus Fred Upton's additional $8 billion on top of the $130 billion to provide additional help for people that have pre-existing conditions. And so there were, you know, several improvements to the bill as it moved along in order to address these different factions. And it was really encouraging to me to see yesterday on the White House lawn how much they really did seem to come together as a team in doing this, and that may actually make it easier to do other things in their legislative agenda going forward.
Well, we'll certainly see about that going forward. Still, the health care bill has an uncertain future in the Senate, and we'll get to that in just a moment. You mentioned one thing in passing there, and that was the Upton Amendment, $8 billion over 5 years to cover the health care costs for those who have pre-existing conditions. Democrats, some in the media, are suggesting that those with pre-existing conditions are on much thinner ice than they were under the Affordable Care Act, if in fact this eventually becomes law. You have members of Congress who voted for this saying there's a clear section in the bill saying that insurance companies are not able to deny people due to pre-existing conditions. However, there may be, given the state flexibility that you mentioned, the fact that they will have to pay more because they run up more costs. So what's the facts on pre-existing conditions?
Well, the facts are that there are three layers of protection for people with pre-existing conditions. First, current law stays in place if states decide to not take the grant and make their own changes. But states also have a responsibility to their citizens. And now they have this additional money from Fred Upton's negotiations to help provide extra payment for people with pre-existing conditions. But when they look at this over the longer term, there shouldn't be so many people with pre-existing conditions. What you have now is a system where people are waiting until they're sick to sign up because the health insurance is so expensive. If you make the health insurance less expensive, give people an incentive to purchase that insurance and provide subsidies if they need them at their lower income to purchase that, and an incentive to keep that, then you don't need to have the pre-existing condition problem. Doesn't become so significant. It's only as significant when people don't have health insurance. And this bill provides an incentive for people to stay covered. If you stay covered, then your premiums will not rise more than, you know, general inflation, or I think medical inflation. That you're going to stay protected if you stay covered. There has to be an element of individual responsibility here. Take care of yourself so that the system can take care of people who really do need our help. So it provides incentives rather than mandates for people to stay covered, money for people who have high costs. It provides additional revenue for the states to set up high risk pools, other mechanisms to help people that have high cost health insurance so that it can be affordable for them without making the insurance so expensive that the healthy people opt out. That's been one of the problems with Obamacare, is so many younger healthy people have said, this insurance is just too expensive, I'm not going to participate. We've got to make the coverage more affordable for them, and we've got to provide them with incentives to buy it and stay covered. In California, before Obamacare, a young person could buy an insurance policy for $50 a month. Today, that young person may wind up having to pay $600 a month for that insurance. So what are they doing? They're opting out and saying, well, I'll just go in whenever I get sick, and they'll have to sell me a policy for the same price. That's not a stable market. It's why we see Obamacare collapsing.
We're talking with Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. And Grace Marie, two more quick questions about policy before we get to the politics on the Senate side in this debate. First of all, the accusations against the bill that millions or even tens of millions will lose coverage. Outside of those who, if the mandates go away, don't have to buy coverage anymore and choose not to, even though a lot of people would obviously urge them to, who else, if anybody, is at risk of losing coverage?
Now, thank you for bringing that up, because the Congressional Budget Office did say that 24 million people would not have coverage as a result of the American Health Care Act that the House passed yesterday. What they're saying is people would decide to not purchase coverage, not that the coverage wouldn't be there for them or that it wouldn't have subsidies for people that are currently on the coverage, but over time people would just say, I don't want to buy those policies. But the thing that the CBO can't put into its formula is realizing that the market and consumer choice can make those policies more affordable, so people will want to buy them. So that number just makes me crazy. It's not that many people would be thrown out of their coverage. They would choose not to buy it. But we can make it so that they will want to buy it because it's more affordable.
And speaking of which, a lot of conservatives balk at the original version of the AHCA because of the Congressional Budget Office estimate that in the short term, the premiums would continue to rise, and then in a short number of years, they would start to head in the other direction. Now the promise, and it was very specific, both in the House and at the White House yesterday, that premiums and deductibles will go down if this is approved. Should they be that much of a guarantee about it? What's the facts here?
I hope this is not going to be we're going to reduce your premiums by $2,500 a year. You know, they know that they have to figure out a way to not have a 25% premium spike next year. And the only way they're going to do that is by giving states more control, more of the ability to provide more affordable options by restructuring those policies. Is there time to do it before next year? It's really getting close, which is one of the reasons the Senate is on such a short time frame to get this done, so that they could actually have a more stable health insurance market for next year. Obamacare is collapsing. They need to pass this in a hurry, or you're going to find millions of people have rights to a subsidy for their health insurance and no place to buy it because there are no insurers participating in their markets.
Well, we certainly saw that in Iowa this week, and to some extent it's getting closer to that in Virginia and other places around the country as well. So let's talk about the Senate side. Despite the urgency you just mentioned, I've heard plenty of reports that they're going to take several weeks to let this process play out. We've already seen Lindsey Graham skittish because he hasn't seen a CBO estimate yet. We've seen Dean Heller say he's opposed to the bill that passed the House. You never know what Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski are going to do. Everyone pretty much agrees that there's going to be a different bill that emerges from the Senate. The question is whether it's a modified version of what passed the House, or they're just going to do their own thing and then somehow try to hammer out a compromise. What are you hearing, and what do you expect the Senate to do here?
Well, we've actually already been having some meetings with Senate staff and with senators to help them think about what they can do to put their own imprint on this. But in fact, the House bent over backwards to write its legislation in such a way that it could get through the torturous process in the Senate to get this to the floor with only needing 51 votes. So the House has actually done a lot of work to make this something that would be more amenable to the Senate. But the Senate does always think that they're the greatest deliberative body in the world, that they really know how to write legislation. We'll take whatever the House sends us kind of as an advisory document after this incredible work that they've done to get this done. But the Senate there are certain things they're going to have to do. They're going to have to devolve more power to the states. They're going to have to give people more regulatory relief in order to be able to make these premiums more affordable. They're going to have to make sure there continues to be a safety net for those currently on coverage so they don't lose it, as the House bill does. And they have to provide a structure of subsidies going forward for people to be able to afford health insurance who are at the lower end of the income scale or who just can't afford the premiums, the full cost of the premiums themselves. So there's certain parameters the Senate bill is going to have to do. So if you look at it from even the 10,000-foot perspective, I think the bills are going to look very similar. The House, the Senate may structure some of those policies in a different way, put their own imprint on it. But the question is, are they going to do it in such a way that it could get back through the House? Because remember, it's going to have to go back through the House of Representatives again to pass if the Senate changes it.
What's acceptable here? How much diversion from the House bill should folks looking for a market-based approach here be willing to accept?
Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see if they go a very different way in structuring those subsidies or if they make tweaks to it. I don't think anyone knows. There's a looming deadline, though. June 22nd, as I understand, the date by which the insurers have to make a final decision about whether they're going to be participating in the exchange markets next year. And so the Senate has to show some real progress over the next 6 weeks and help those insurers see what this legislation is going to look like so they can make their own decisions about whether or not they're going to be participating in the health insurance markets that 10 million people getting subsidies through the exchanges are participating in.
They're going to end up adding more money for Medicaid?
They may very well, and they may also allow the Medicaid expansion to last longer. Many of the senators on this 12-member Senate task force that they have pulled together are from states, Republican states, that expanded Medicaid. And so I think that's going to be certainly something very much on the table, and it may be something that they have to work particularly hard with the House to make sure that they get this right in a way that both houses could accept it. That's the real challenge right now.
Well, a four-vote majority for the Republicans in the Senate, a four-vote win in the House of Representatives on Thursday. So the margins, not too big, but they have their best opportunity in a long time to deal with it. Grace Marie, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Grace Marie Turner is president of the Galen Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.